Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Thank you for listening to Spin, the Rally Pod, brought to you by Dirtfish Rally School. For your chance to experience life behind the wheel of a rally car, head to drive.dirtfish.com to find the course that's right for you. What are you waiting for? We're right here waiting for you.
Well, hello, Dirtfish Rally friends, and welcome to Spin the Rally Pod. It's a post-Acropolis rally.
Do you forget where we were then?
Yeah, for a second. Yeah, thanks, David. It's a post-Acropolis rally, Spin the Rally Pod, with myself, Colin Clark, and our... I don't know what you are these days, David. You're our head of media, you're our senior staff writer. What else are you?
Just your general bottle washer and...
driver. You've been our driver all weekend, which has been quite nice. David Evans. David Evans joining us, as always, on Spin the Rally Pod. David, I think we have to kick off, really, this one, talking about the organisers and the challenges they faced. It's only 3 days ago.
I want to take you back, Colin. Colin, just to set the scene a wee bit here, Cole and Elliot, our cameraman, were out here a bit earlier. Came out on Tuesday. I came out Wednesday night. And so the boys landed in Tuesday and a bit of rain arrived Tuesday afternoon. And I got a variety of phone calls ranging from, "Oh, it's terrible." "Oh, the weather's terrible." All the way up to, "They're going to cancel it. There's no way they can run this event. It's finished. Don't even bother coming. Put me on the plane. It's going to be a nightmare."
Honestly, if you'd sat with us on Thursday morning in the little cafe in Carmina Vula and you'd watched the raging torrent that was running down the street and the rain that was coming down, you'd have understood.
So I arrived, as I say, Wednesday night into Athens. And stayed in a hotel overnight, arrived very late on Wednesday night, and stayed just about 5 miles outside of the airport. And I have to say, I have not experienced rain and thunder and lightning. Oof. You know, where George Donaldson, we need GD here right now, because I have never experienced continual lightning.
Yeah.
It was almost like it was more light than dark.
Wow.
And the thunder were just... There was very, very little thunder. Yeah. Just a sheet of continual lightning. And then all of a sudden, another huge fork into the mountains. And honestly, I was in this... It was a nice-ish hotel, but not a great hotel. But the electricity kept going off. And there was probably, I would say, a six-foot balcony. And it was quite well protected. So I thought, I'll just go and stand out on the balcony. I opened the door, and it was like you turned the shower straight into the room. And the rain was coming from underneath the balcony, 6 feet in. It was just unbelievable. So, no, I do get it. But then Thursday afternoon, when we were just about to record our preview at the Super Special, it absolutely poured with rain again. And that was the last of the rain, wasn't it?
It was the last of the rain, thank you.
That was about 2 o'clock Thursday?
Yeah, but it wasn't the last of the challenges, because the big challenge for the organisers was... the state of the roads, particularly in the mountains. We started off on Friday around Loutraki. We headed then towards the mountains, towards Lamia, Saturday and Sunday, all up in the mountains. And the concern there was the state of the roads, the access roads. Would they get emergency crews in? I am quite astonished that all that we have lost here is shakedown and 10 kilometres of the final stage of the rally.
There was another one shortened, was there not?
Was there another one shortened a wee bit somewhere?
I think so, yeah.
Well, okay, well, but we haven't lost much. We've lost a whole load less than I anticipated we would lose. Great job.
Two things happened to the roads, didn't they? The roads either got washed away and left enormous, just kind of...
you're right. It was the... the second stage on Friday morning was shortened.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So it either washed all of the rocks away and it left these huge kind of just... gorges in the middle of the road that was incredibly difficult to get through, or the road just filled with mud and became absolutely flooded. And that was where the issue was on the recce, that the roads were impassable because simply two-wheel drive cars couldn't get anywhere, couldn't get up any hills. It's been a really compromised event in terms of stuff. A lot of stuff that we've never really seen before, such as a recce that, okay, you can do this stage now, or, oh, crikey, it's going a bit dark. Okay, we'll give you another chance to recce this stage tomorrow.
Which Ogier had to do.
Which Ogier had to do, yeah. And then just the organisers sending out these videos.
Yeah.
Because obviously the crews were really keen. They'd done their, some of the stages they'd recce'd on Monday, and they were coming to them on the weekend. So there's so much evolution of the road across those 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
That the organisers were saying, okay, fair enough, we understand those concerns, we'll send a car through, a video car through, make a video of the whole stage the day before, or as close as we can to when you're running, and then send you all the videos.
Yeah, so which is great.
Which is quite brilliant.
But you had 24 hours sometimes until the stage ran, and they evolved again.
And on top of that, you know, the stages today, the boys were having to watch, and the boys and girls were having to watch the videos last night.
Yeah.
They're already trying to watch their own onboards, and honestly, it's been a gargantuan effort from the organisers have done everything they could do to make this work. But it's been such a stress for the teams and for the crews. They've had so much more work, but it's worth it.
Oh, totally. Totally worth it. It's the Acropolis Rally, for goodness sake.
It's Acropolis Rally, and we've had another absolute blinding Acropolis
Rally. We've had a blinding rally because there has been so much, again, to talk about. But I have to say, the Friday, we'll talk through the teams, but the Friday for me, I really don't like these days. It wasn't a long day in terms of competitive mileage, but it was an enormously long day in terms of the distance covered. No service. What happens when you get no service or no remote service is you get drivers driving accordingly. And okay, you might say, well, that goes back to the good old days of rallying where there was strategy and all the rest.
It's a strategic approach, yeah.
But we didn't see drivers pushing to the limit because they knew that early on in the rally, pushing to the limit could be catastrophic. So we didn't see an awful lot happening on Friday. Apart from
2M Sport cars.
Yeah, but that was completely different. You know, we had one where the...
Yeah, it was not in any way related to...
But that's something for future discussion.
Hang on a sec though, Cole, because, you know, well, let's briefly discuss it here because, you know, we consistently have banged on about the fact that central service is frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, we want to have the ability to take events elsewhere. Yeah. That's exactly what the organisers did. They started in Athens and they progressively came north through Friday. It's a linear route. We're supposed to be loving the linear route.
Yeah, no, but they did linear routes in the past, David, with roadside services or with... Should we call them pop-up services? I don't know what you want to call them, remote services. They only became remote services when we introduced the cloverleaf pattern. Whatever you want to call it, they didn't do linear routes with big gaps between
but
services.
But now, thanks to, we understand there's a meeting next week, WRC Commission meeting next week, not next week, September the 22nd, where if you go and have a look on dirtfish.com, you will have seen the story. Just unbelievably encouraging story from the promoter that they are now discussing not ditching central service cloverleaf configuration.
Relaxing the rules.
But potentially giving events the opportunity to run remote services again, which that would have worked brilliantly on Friday, wouldn't it?
It really would have.
You know, you send a couple of team members down in a van, chuck a box in the back, chuck some bits and pieces in it, and crack on.
Absolutely.
And for me, that's absolute heaven. Let's just get back to that.
And it makes an awful lot of sense. You're right now, the regulations don't allow it. You're not allowed to put in a remote service.
So. Just when I say it's absolute heaven, it's a little bit of nonsense because we do need...
It's like a nostalgic view of it. We do need
the commercial aspect.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day when Ari Vatanen and David Richards were changing gearboxes at the side of the road and all of that stuff, it's great, but that is 100% impractical these days. And we need an element of a service park to bring the commercial aspect of the sport together. We need, you know, there are partners for all of these teams. They want to come and they want to be wined and dined a little bit and to see some action.
But I think there are ways of doing that. That don't need, if you have a central rally fest,
yeah,
the rally comes through at some point, You know, yeah. But that is where you host your amazing big hospitality units, and you put on a proper rally fest.
Yeah.
So you know, the teams have all got extra cars. They've all got extra drivers.
Yeah.
You can take your VIPs out. There's nothing better than taking a VIP out, putting them in a car.
That 100%.
Could be a rally five car or a rally one car. And for someone that's never been in a rally car, it's just as thrilling. It's just as thrilling.
I agree.
So there are ways of doing it, but you have to be open-minded.
My only point is that we can't go back to 3 days of remote services and basically forget all of that aspect. We have to embrace all different.
You have to have a rally central, and you have to have the ability to go out, I think, and you know, utilize, because let's face it, at the end of the day, you know, the availability of rally stages, 25 years ago, 30 years ago in the UK, there were thousands of kilometers of rally stages available to you. Every single year, that number shrinks. You know, we can't go to the wonderful stages in Italy, in northern Italy now.
Because
it's all tarmac. Yeah. You know, so the opportunity decreases every year.
I can't remember the point I was about to make there.
But yeah, we have to be able to use what's available to us, and we have to be able to say, yeah, we're going to go there. It might be 100 miles away, but we're going there.
In defence of Tuscany, there's still enough of those beautiful white gravel roads. Right. We know that.
A couple of years ago,
we were up there. Yeah. We found most of them, aren't it? There's plenty.
Anyway, we get slightly sidetracked by talk of them. And it's worth getting sidetracked, as you say, because it is big news that. And yeah, do go and read David's article. It's very, very encouraging and a really interesting article. Let's talk about the rally, though, David. You know, we look back 12 months and, you know, it was an absolute joy for Hyundai. It was an absolute nightmare for Toyota. Completely reversed this year. It's a 1-2 for Toyota, who really haven't looked in any trouble, it's fair to say. Yes, you know, Alvin Evans did have one or two little issues. Ogier had his issue, but that was down to the conditions. But Robin Perra at the front, even although he opened the road on Friday, he's kind of looked like a winner just about all weekend.
It's been an incredibly strong, you know, the turnaround from 12 months ago is remarkable. I think Toyota has come so far with the car, but also there's been failings with the Hyundai. And talking to Cyril Abiteboul, through Hyundai team principal, through this one, he said this one hurts. Yeah. This one perhaps hurts more than most, because this was a banker for them. Yeah. They expected the big result. A podium lockout last year, you come this year, and you're not in any way complacent, but you are thinking, it's less of a stress from going to somewhere like Finland or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
But no, all credit to Tom Fowler, the technical director at Toyota, and his team. They've clearly worked some magic on that car. And like you say, Kalle Rovanperä as well has worked his magic. He has driven the drive of a champion
this weekend.
He didn't get ruffled. It is really frustrating that Ogier had his problem last thing on Saturday night, because it would have been really cool to see the pair of them fighting through Sunday. And I think there's a lot of speculation. Would Kalle have absolutely gone for it? He kind of talked the talk that he was thinking championship, and you've got to. But then when we spoke to him last night, on and off the record, you could see he talked about wanting the fight. And this is what Tom Fowler said. He's a driver that wants the fight. He enjoys the fight. And the point now is that he's got a championship in the bag. He's not clamouring for that first title in the way that he was last year. And he's sitting on a 25-point buffer.
He's a different driver. He's a more mature driver. We have talked about this a number of times. But when we caught up with him on Sunday morning, he did say, look, you know, this was the plan all weekend, was to show the pace, but not to do anything silly, not to take any undue risks. And he did exactly that.
Yeah.
And it was, I wouldn't say, you have seen before, complete masterclasses from Robin Perra. I wouldn't maybe categorise this one as a masterclass, but my goodness me, it was an impressive performance. We caught up with Kalle at the end of the event, and this is what he had to say.
It has been, let's say, from 3 years to quite good ones. So definitely when the condition gets tricky here, we are quite strong.
It seemed like a measured approach this weekend. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I feel that we stick to the plan quite well. Starting first here and then, let's say, fighting back Saturday quite well, still staying out of trouble and trying to take care of the car and the tires. So anyway, this is kind of rally where you also need to take care a bit and finish.
Obviously, we were enjoying the battle between you and Seb. How disappointed were you yesterday evening when Seb had his issues? I'm sure there was a little bit of you that wanted him to be right there battling to the end with you.
Yeah, of course, you always want to battle. With somebody like Seb, it's not easy, but like we did the right thing. We kept the pressure on all the time, and then, yeah, that was the plan, to stay there and show that we have the pace also to fight back.
So, David, Robin Berra is looking, he's looking like it's back-to-back titles. It's getting stronger and stronger by the rally. Elvin needed to win. He certainly, if he wasn't going to win, he needed to finish in front of Callie Robin Berra this weekend. But, you know, Elvin Evans had his problems out there, and he stuck at it. He stuck at it, and he's finished second. Is it a disaster for him?
No. And yes. In terms of the title, it has to be. This was not what he wanted to happen. But it's not the end of the road, because we know we've got three rounds left. And a retirement for Callie brings it all close together again. I think in terms of pure pace, we needed Elvin. Elvin needed to win here to get essentially back psychologically to that place that, yes, I can beat Callie Robinpera. And if he was going to do the championship on his own terms, he needed to win the rally to score maximum points on the power stage. It's not over, but it's another small nail in the coffin of Elvin's championship hopes this year, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree with that entirely. I just think it's he showed us, didn't he, that last stage on Friday. Where you asked him, about, well, what made the difference and what do you have to do to keep up that kind of pace? And he said, I have to grow a bigger set of balls, basically.
Yeah.
So he did show us that when he does decide to throw a little bit of caution to the wind, the pace is absolutely there. I don't think we ever doubted that.
No, in many ways, Cole, it's much harder for Elvin because he knows if he chucks it off the road, it's absolutely finished.
Yeah, correct.
So he chucks it off the road here, throws away 20, whatever, how many points, I can't remember. And then suddenly you go to the next round, and Callie has an engine problem.
And you think, what if?
Why did I do that? Yeah. Why didn't I settle for second?
And that's the measure of Elvin Evans. He has such an analytical approach to this.
Yeah.
He has such, it's all absolutely done with an incredible amount of thought, an incredible amount of consideration,
an
incredible amount. He's the most strategic of drivers that we've got out there, and he will not push it beyond where he feels, and there are various different measures that come into this, but where he feels it's safe to do so.
Yeah.
It's safe in terms of the championship challenge, safe in terms of damaging the car, safe in terms of all sorts of things.
Mm.
So he measures it, he weighs it up, they all come in, and he decides how he's going to approach it. Last stage on Friday, for whatever reason, he decided to give it some, and it was remarkable to watch. But we did also catch up with Elvin Evans. Here are his thoughts on the event.
It's inevitably bittersweet. When you look at the point situation, then it's not great from that side. But in all honesty, we could have been coming away with nothing. Yesterday lunchtime, it was looking pretty grim in that stage before lunch, even to get the car out of there. So on one hand, sort of counting our lucky stars, if you know what I mean, that we got the car out. But I think what happened in the first place was probably quite unlucky. We don't still know really what's caused it. There wasn't any major sort of drama or impact to cause that. So, one of them things, and all things considered, we have to be happy with the points we got.
Yeah, just looking back at that incident yesterday, David and I and one or two people have discussed it. Probably the majority of drivers would not have stopped and would not have had, if you like, the nous to actually say, listen, I've got to keep this car alive for the rest of the rally. You did. How long was that thought process? Did you consider it, or was it instant, I've got to stop?
No, I think I carried the issue for like 3 or 4 Ks before I decided to turn off the engine, and I was monitoring the situation, let's say. You have a rough idea what's going on with some figures that we get on the dash, and you have to use your judgment then at that point.
So David Elvin Evans keeping his championship challenges alive, as you rightly said earlier, it is going to need a set of circumstances now for him to go really too much further towards the end of the season with that hope of his maiden championship.
It's a mechanical sport, Cole.
It is a mechanical sport. Who knows? Yes. And we go to the last three rounds, two tarmac rounds. And who would you put your money on tarmac between Elvin and Callie?
Yeah.
Every time, I know who I'd put my money on.
And don't get us wrong here. We absolutely love Kelly Rompera.
We do.
All we want is a fight to go down to the wire in Japan.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm sure that there's an element that Kelly, we know he's a hustler and a street fighter, so he'd love it as well.
Yeah, he would. Ogier, Sebastian Ogier. Before we talk about Ogier, let's just hear a little bit of Ogier audio. This was Saturday night after what was a very difficult stage for Sebastian Ogier.
The whole afternoon was actually quite eventful. It started, actually, I think same corner where Cherry had his issue. I also had an impact in this place because it's quite hard to avoid this hole. And my front right wishbone was also a bit damaged, but obviously was still drivable and managed to fix it, and I was still managing to have a good pace on this stage and also on the next one. Unfortunately, then coming to the regroup, when we restarted out from the regroup, there was no hybrid anymore. Yeah, obviously I knew I would lose a bit of time on this stage without hybrid. But that wasn't the biggest issue we had at the end, because after a couple of kilometers we started to have one puncture on the rear. And almost straight away after that, the second one appeared, so we had double puncture on the rear. Unfortunately, exit of an hairpin. I don't know, it looks like one of the smoothest of this stage, which was very rough. A very small bang I hear on the rear, and my upright was broken. Since I'm not doing championships anymore, I think the luck have lost me a little bit, and maybe that's the price to pay when you're not doing the full-time season. But it's for sure, it's never nice. On the other hand, there is still two cars from the team on the podium. Calais was doing a great job anyway, so it's not, we cannot say that he's stalling this victory, you know. It's from first on the road yesterday, he have done everything he could, so it's nothing to say about that. But of course, I would have loved to carry on fighting with him up to the end.
Ach, David, you know what? We talked about Kelly Rompera having a measured, controlled weekend. For me, Ogier seemed to be pretty much in control as well. And you know, it's Greece. It's Greece. It's Acropolis. These things happen. We can't put that down to a weakness in the car. I don't think we can put it down to a driver error. You know, rocks appear. Suspensions get broken. It was just one of those things.
The Acropolis will always do that to cars and to drivers and to hopes and aspirations of victories here, won't it? It's the nature of the event. You come to the Acropolis and you roll the dice. And sadly for Ogier, he didn't come up with a pair of sixes this time. It's difficult. I think, you know, you talking about him being in absolute control, I'm not entirely sure.
I think he was. I think he dialed himself in nicely. He wasn't doing it.
You said the same with Safari. And then on that Sunday morning, Kelly pulled that time out of nowhere, didn't he? And you know, undermined
but
control.
But that's Rompera. But no, David, that's... No. You know, that is Rompera. And that's the genius and the brilliance of Rompera. And we've talked about this many times, where others see jeopardy, he sees opportunity. And he saw that as his opportunity. Nothing to do with Ogier giving back any degree of control to Rompera. It was Rompera saying...
By definition, if you're 10-second lead becomes a 5-second lead, you've lost 50% of your control.
You can be in control with a 1-second lead. He was controlling the circumstances. He was controlling his pace. He was controlling his expectations of the stage.
He was in control of himself. I think that's a very... I don't think he'd got this event in his grip.
No, I didn't say that. That's not what I said. I said he was in control, and he was in control.
Well, they're all in control.
No, they're not. Some of them
aren't. Who's been out of control?
Right, I'll tell you. When we get to talking about Hyundai, I'll tell you, because you have a very interesting thought. Thierry Neuville, you could argue.
I didn't think he was out of control. I thought he was in the zone.
You spotted something with Neuville.
Not a lack of control.
Well, but the suggestion was that there was something different about him, different about his pose. He was maybe pushing it a little too much. He was maybe a little too hyped up. We know Sebastian Ogier was on top of the emotions. He had all sorts of incidents to deal with.
That, 100%. Ogier has that ability to totally get himself into that place where he can drive at that consistent speed.
Right.
Thierry Neuville has that same ability, and I do think he went a percent above that.
Half a percent.
Whatever. But I wouldn't say he was out of control. And I think that what happened to Thierry was not a control
thing. No, we'll talk about this shortly, because there's quite a bit to discuss with Hyundai, with the issues that he had with that suspension, then the issues that Esa Pekka had as well. We'll talk about that shortly, but yeah, all right.
Are you going to sit back a bit now? He's just leaned right
forward. I got very close. Apologies for that.
I might have to call HR. Nicole, hello.
It is a part-time season. He does come out to win, and you can tell that. You know, he's come back out on Sunday morning. I'm pretty sure if he was given a choice, he'd have gotten his plane and been straight home.
Yeah.
David, it is that time of year. You know, might we see Ogier full-time next year?
No.
Definitely not. Which team has he got a job to do for next year? Can you see him going anywhere other than?
There is a lot of talk about this whole Hyundai thing, and you could see, you know, you've only got to look at the guy that we spent a long time talking to yesterday, is François-Xavier de Maison, FX. Yeah,
that's a perfect fit again.
100%. You know, the two of them dominated WRC for 4 years and forged an incredible bond and friendship and everything.
That dog looks exactly like my Algernon. Exactly the same markings with those.
Algernon was dead.
He is dead. Don't say it like that.
Sorry.
Algernon passed away. He was the greatest dog ever. Goodness me.
Holly's
the
greatest
dog. Hello, fella?
No.
Oh, he looks exactly like my Algernon. I can't believe that.
I'm sorry,
I've had a moment. Oh, my goodness.
But at least the important thing is you're not dramatising it in any way, are you?
Not in any way. No. I'm almost tearing up. He looks like my Algernon.
Let's move on. So,
dogs do strange things to you, don't they?
Ogier and that partnership was unbelievably strong. And if they were going to try and recreate that, I'm sure there's an appeal there. But Ogier leaving Toyota, it's a stretch. There's so many options. And the absolute respect between Sébastien Ogier and Japan is remarkable.
And what you have to ask yourself are a number of questions here. Well, the one question you have to ask yourself, and then you have to consider a number of different answers. The one question is, why is Ogier doing it? Well, why is he continuing to drive?
Because he enjoys it.
Right. He will look at Hyundai and he will realise that Hyundai are nowhere near as stable as Toyota are just now. Hyundai are on the way. They're very much on the way.
Yeah.
And with de Maison, they've taken a massive step. You know, they've been just kind of slightly just trotting forward, occasionally getting held up and maybe going back a bit. They're now taking strides forward. But they're nowhere near where
Toyota's nowhere near.
I'd say that in terms of stability, in terms of the word I'm looking for harmony, in terms of harmony. And all of these things, they're a long way short of that. They're a long, long way short. So that's one thing. Is he doing it for the fun? Is he doing it for the money? You have to ask that question. And if he is doing it for the money, which I don't think he is, then he might consider Hyundai. Hyundai might be able to offer him silly money to come and drive for them. Yeah. Is he doing it for records? Probably not.
I thought you said there's one question.
There's one question, but these are the answers, right? So the question is, why is he doing it? So there's one question. What I said, listen...
Yeah, but you then said, is he doing it for the money? That's another question.
No, but these are options. These are options as to why he's doing it. So the question is, why is he doing it? Is he doing it for the money? That's not a different question. Is it for the money then? Well, put it in a different way. That's another question as well. Is it for the glory? Is it for the fun of it?
Can we not just get back to talking about him in Greece?
Oh, go on. You pick this one up. You know what I mean?
I do completely, but I think Sébastien Ogier's motivations for either moving or staying with Toyota is a different, totally different podcast where we need to go back and look at the motivations for him moving.
Let's move on. We've already played the audio, haven't we, from Sébastien Ogier? I think we have. So let's move on then, David. It's been a long rally. And it's got hot. And David's jumper was completely understandable and acceptable, actually, in Athens, because it was quite chilly in the breeze
and
on Thursday
morning,
afternoon.
And
this morning when we were 5,000 feet up a mountain.
Is that 5,000 metres? Were we
feet,
halfway
David,
up 5, Everest?
5,000 metres is halfway up Everest.
Yeah. I think that's... 5,000 like
feet.
Morning.
About 1,400 metres up.
Yeah, it's been quite a long...
But
anyway, moving on.
Who are we talking about? On and it's, I just don't get it. But anyway, Takamoto-san, just very quickly.
Great.
Really great.
Great. Just really totally great. After everything that he came from last year. As we said, many times he was nowhere. In his own words, he was nowhere. Sixth, but donkey's years behind the rest, and then crashed on a power stage and all. No, disaster. And then really on edge a little bit, coming in here, no test, no shakedown, and straight into tricky conditions first thing on Friday morning. Great job. Just, you know,
he's in a good place right now.
I think he is. Don't say that. You're always doing that. When he was always in a good place, and you know, he wasn't a couple of rallies ago in Estonia.
You didn't let me finish it, and I'll tell you why I think he's in a good place. A, because I think his driving is showing signs of getting back to its best, right? Okay, but that's not the important thing. What I like is the way the relationship, and I think it's taken a little while to bed in, the relationship with Takasan and Aaron Johnson, to me, looks stronger and stronger and stronger. They are now working as a proper team.
I'd never seen that. I'd never had it.
It takes time. I'm not saying it was bad.
But this time last year, I would have said that they were strong.
Now seeing real signs that that is a complete team. It's not a driver and co-driver with a dominant and a less dominant member of the team. They are a proper team, and I'm liking the way that relationship is developing, and I am absolutely certain that it's feeding in to Takasan's performance.
All rallying, one source. By now, you know that dirtfish.com is the place to go for all of your rallying news. But when it's time to try your hand behind the wheel, just join us here at Dirtfish Rally School, nestled in the Cascade Mountains in Snoqualmie, Washington. Whether you're a pro seeking extra seat time or a novice looking to get started, we've got programs tailored to all rallying needs. And when you want to watch the best in the world, just head over to our YouTube channel. Our coverage of the WRC and American rallying is second to none. Follow us at Dirtfish Rally across all social media platforms and shop the latest looks in our merchandise store now. As always, rally on.
Let's talk about Hyundai. We had a good chat with FX De Maison. We had a good chat with Cyril Abitibol. They are still in the performance building phase with their Rally 1 car, whereas perhaps Toyota are in the performance gain phase, where you start to look, you've got reliability, you've got a good pace, you start to look at areas where you can find a little more pace. You find a little more pace by perhaps taking a little weight out of certain components. Hyundai, for me, are still trying to find components that are a little more solid, a little more reliable. I think, and I'm not saying that, but Cyril said it. He said, we need to check and see whether that impact with Thierry should justifiably have caused the damage it did. Same with the issues that Esa-Pekka had. You know, should those parts have broken with that level of abuse, if you like, with that level of impact? They're at a different point from Toyota, and they do need to get on top of these things. And that is part of the challenge for FX. You want to talk?
I was a little bit distracted.
You were more than a little bit distracted. You weren't bothering listening to me. It's all right when David Evans is talking, but when anyone else is talking, you know.
I was actually looking for Norihiko Katsuta's times in Hokkaido Rally because obviously Katsuta San's father was competing against Jari Matti in Japan, and I was hoping to update, but I couldn't find it.
Couldn't find him. Yeah, well done.
No, sorry.
Well done.
But I was a little distracted. But it wasn't really a question there.
But it's your view. This is not what a podcast is about. I don't have to keep asking questions. It's your view on the point that I'm making.
A very quick recap on that point.
The point I'm making is that they're still searching. The second phase of development of a car is finding the ultimate performance by taking the weight out. They are still looking to actually find reliability in their components.
We should play a little bit of that Cyril interview, because that was really...
Let's hear from Cyril Abitibol. We talked to him on... Saturday night. I'm liking more and more Cyril Abitibol.
You like the cut of his jib, don't you?
I do. I really do, because he's got different ideas, and he's got... he talks a lot, and I don't mind people that talk a lot. Really? Because Adamo at times, geez.
Well, you talk a lot, and you quite like yourself, don't you?
I love myself, David Evans. Here's Cyril Abitibol. Do you kind of see this year as a transition year? You're transitioning from the Adamo years, the year without really a leader in place, and now into your culture, into the way you want things doing. Is it a transitional year where these things are clearly not what you want, but they're all part of the transitioning process?
For sure. When you arrive in late January, you will have had little influence in the things that you will have to deal with. But I don't want to distance myself from the organization. I think that... I'm part of the team. I'm part of the team since 7 months. I am part of the team full stop. Having said that, we have a plan. If we want to have a good go at Toyota in the very short-term future, and I'm not talking about 2027, I'm talking short-term future, we know that there is a number of things that we want to improve and that we will be improving, and starting also with the organization. I mean, there is some elements in the organization that know that FX is part of the team that we can build looking forward. But I want to look forward. I don't want to look backward.
See, that was interesting. And he does have a different perspective. And you find this sometimes with people coming in from Formula One, that they do come with a different level, not a different level of analysis. That's entirely insulting to WRC engineers. But just a different way of approaching stuff. And he does, and he's absolutely right. And the stuff, like you say, we spoke to FX about, is that second level is about bringing weight out of the car. They're into that second level, and they're potentially putting weight into the car to build more reliability into it. And there's a lot of analysis coming up on dirtfish.com about where the Hyundai is for the rest of this year and going into next year. The cinnamon donut, not very good.
It's a little bit, it's not really a donut. It's a cinnamon cake. It's a bit too dry for me.
Is it? That's not, I can do cake. So there we are. So
shut
your face. HR again. Calling Nicole from HR.
So let's talk then about Thierry Neuville. We had that little discussion earlier on about whether he was in control or not. Just talk us through where that discussion came from.
Can you see that on the roundabout? Look at that.
Right.
There's a scooter has just gone by. When he goes past, look. It was one of the scooters. That's remarkable. One of the scooters from Peugeot.
Oh, so it was at Peugeot.
It was the silver 206 WRC scooter that the drivers and the crew would have used to go to and from the in control into their service bar. That scooter's 20 odd years old. So it was
2001.
They were Marlboro, weren't they? Yeah, the silver car.
Yeah.
Sorry, a brief aside.
It was quite interesting, though.
Was it?
Moderately.
Thierry, I do think that when we saw him after he'd set that extraordinary time on Friday night, when he took 9 seconds. No, it was on Saturday morning, wasn't it?
He lost time and then got it back.
In Carruth. Came into it there. And he just, there was a sense that he wasn't distracted. But you get this when you talk to drivers, when they are completely in the zone, you can tell that they're just not taking things in. They're not listening because they're so focused on everything that they're doing. And that's where he was. And you don't always see, normally, when we get to talk to drivers, they've had that sort of decompression, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. He was pretty much straight off the bottom of the stage, straight into the regroup, before the regroup.
Well, he was very short liaison, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then they were straight into frantic activity.
Into working out what to do with the tyres, the strategy and what to...
Scraping the mud.
Yeah, and it did seem to me that he was absolutely on one. And he was in that place. And I felt there was something a wee bit different about Thierry. And I think he wanted this victory as well. Obviously,
I have
of course
to say, David, I'm going to go with what you're saying, because unusually, you've been remarkably observant of human factors this weekend. When it comes to the rally, there's no one better. You pick up everything. But the human side of it sometimes... I think you're not quite the god that you are of writing when it comes to picking out the human kind of...
I'm not.
But Thierry, you did pick up something there. And you also picked up something really interesting with Ogier during that almost what could easily have been a panic when the car fell off the jacks. They were so up against it with time. And you said, but did you not notice? To me it was frantic. And he said, but did you not notice? He literally stopped for a second.
Stop, I just checked the tyre.
And that's all it took him. One second to say, no, this is how much time we've got. This is what we have to do.
Yeah.
It was a very, very good observation. Yeah. But anyway, Neuville now, once again, sadly, is building for a championship challenge next year. We've said that year after year after year. When did Neuville finished runner-up in the championship many, many times.
Yeah.
But when was the last time he actually took his challenge? Did he ever take it to the last round?
Yeah, it was Australia, wasn't it?
Yes, there was three of them.
There was four of them.
Four of them, was it?
Was it four? It was Ogier, Tanak, Thierry, was it Alvin maybe? I can't remember.
It was the Rumble Down Under or something, wasn't it? What did they call it?
Yeah.
I think it was three. It may have been four. But, we're three rounds to go. three and a half rounds when he crashed out, and his championship challenge is over. You might argue his championship challenge was over when he got disqualified from Safari.
I want Thierry Neuville to be a world champion. I think he's earned it. I think he deserves it. I think he's fast enough, but I don't think he's consistent enough.
Yeah. That's the argument.
And he needs to find it.
And what you cannot afford, if you do have these momentary lapses in concentration that cost you the odd rally, you cannot afford to have a car which also occasionally lets you down.
Nope.
You can be world champion in a car like a Toyota and make one or two mistakes a year.
Gary Matty said it, didn't he? You know, when Calais had that big old shunt in Finland, Gary Matty said, everybody makes one mistake a year.
Now, the team made one or two mistakes and let them down.
They have made more than the odd one mistake. Well, yeah. Sorry, Gary Matty.
Yeah, he did. But remember that year in Australia again where he actually crashed on the power stage? It was his only accident of the whole year, Gary Matty Latvala. We were celebrating. It was like, Gary Matty has gone a whole year without making a big mistake, and then he crashed on the power stage, the last stage of the year. It was awful.
I don't remember that.
No, but I do. I was there. I was eulogising on radio about how wonderful it was. Has he turned the corner? Is this the making of Yari Matty Latvala? A whole year without her. Oh, he stopped in the stage.
Yari Matty.
Remember, he put it into the trees on a right-hander. I see it now.
No, I do remember. Absolutely.
Anyway. So for Neuville to be a champion, he needs to find a little more reliability, and the team need to give him a more reliable, consistent car next year. Lappi, quick word for Lappi, David.
Lappi, great.
Do you think you can take positives?
No, because before he had the issues Friday morning, he said he didn't feel comfortable in the car, didn't feel safe in the car. So
he did say that, didn't he?
Yeah, so not so much. You know, the concern is he came from Finland on a completely different style of gravel rally, not feeling in control or confident in the car. He's come to a completely different style, rough gravel rally here, and he still doesn't feel. So something's changed, because if you go back to Sardinia, to previous rallies where he was seemingly never off the podium, he looked very, very comfortable there. So I'm not sure there are a huge number of positives to take from here, particularly not when he was lying under the car trying to fit the alternator belt in it. Horribly warm conditions in Etea yesterday afternoon. I guess the positives are that he got the car home.
And he scored points.
Scored points, yeah. And you know, he looks good, doesn't he? He's got, you know, the beard's really working for him. He looked pretty handsome. He didn't seem to wear his cap as much, and he looked a lot like a kind of
he's got that Viking look about him. And what's the point about that?
That was a positive. He looks good.
Positive.
Yeah. He's got a lovely co-driver in Yanni.
And here's the thing. So, you know, I've talked about, we've gone team by team in this podcast, as we often do after an event. So I've gone number one driver, number two driver. But the best performing driver, we've left till last in Hyundai, Danny Sordo.
Danny.
Once again. Now, I said to Cyril Abitable, you know, Sordo, final word for Sordo, what a job he's done. He said, you have a soft spot for Sordo.
Yeah, we
Everyone
do.
Does. Everyone
you,
does.
You rumbled.
But, you can't argue against Sordo's performance here. Yes, he's not maybe shown the ultimate pace.
But for a decade now, this is what keeps Danny Sordo employed.
Year by year.
He's always there. He's always bringing points.
I'm going to say right now, I don't think he'll be driving next year.
I don't think he will.
I don't like the sound of some of the responses we get. And I think Hyundai could be making, if they're talking manufacturers championship, an enormous mistake.
I would agree with that. On a personal level, a WRC without Danny Sordo is a much poorer place, because
Hyundai without Sordo are a poorer team.
Well, yeah, I was going to come to that, but you could argue
that's your job to interrupt me.
You could argue that are they looking forward? You know, at the beginning of last year, the beginning of 22, they had a big push towards a young driver development scheme. They brought Oliver Solberg in. Then at the end of last year, it was all change. No, we're going with a much more experienced outfit, blah, blah, blah. What's the intention for next year?
180. Well, we know what it is. They've said it. There's another 180. They're talking about young finding drivers. A young driver.
Yeah.
And that is laudable because and very sensible.
You need to. But is it productive towards a championship?
Correct. So what Abitbol has said is, look, you know, we intend to be here for the long term. We know there's a situation in 2 or 3 years' time where potentially driver choices will be limited. So we're going to bring someone through. Fourth car, David. It has to be a fourth car.
It does.
You know, it has to be. You have to keep Sordo
there. A third car for who?
Third car, Sordo. and share it. You know, share that
car.
Yeah,
but so who's the other driver? Is it Oliver Solberg? Is it Teemu Suninen?
Well, you might allow this.
Is it Emil Lindholm?
To send the young driver in full time, for me, is a massive gamble. To bring a young driver into the team on a part-time basis with Danny Sordo, for me, is the sensible way to do it. Sordo's
nonsense.
Why nonsense? The best idea is a fourth car for me.
Total
why?
Nonsense.
You introduce him to the stresses, the challenges of working within a point
scoring
team.
You give a young driver a complete programme and you say, essentially, do what you want.
I'm
do
saying that. I'm saying a full season, but sharing it with Sordo.
A full season.
Four cars, three cars on some events, four cars on others. So when your young driver is your third driver, you only have three cars because Sordo's at home. But when Sordo's your nominated driver, you have four cars. The young driver's also there.
Four cars all the time.
Oh, well, that would be great. If they want to do that, great. And that was my initial point. Again, you're not listening.
No.
That was my initial point.
But I'm with you.
Right,
I think we might be getting to the end of this podcast.
Perhaps. Just have a bit of lemon.
I'll try a bit of that.
You need a bit of sugar. This place is getting really busy. It's obviously a very populous little place. I think we've chosen well here. Mm. A lot of people turning up. You know, they do have an issue, but I think they have to keep Danny Sordo in the fold. He's talked about, I think, his need or his desire to perhaps mentor younger drivers as well, to help younger drivers. What better way than, you know, having a teammate in that third car, a car mate,
is
as a young driver?
Is Danny Sordo the right... This is definitely another podcast, and I'm just throwing it out there. Is Danny Sordo somebody that is a great mentor?
He's been there. He's done it. He's been.
How many world championships has he won?
Doesn't matter. How many world championships has did Alex Ferguson win? Did Alex Ferguson
win? Who taught a whole legion of drivers to left foot brake?
Right.
Yari Matilavla.
The best coaches, the best mentors in life are. We're not talking about the elite
Alex
performers.
Ferguson's not a mentor.
The elite performers, the elite achievers, are very rarely the best mentors, because they have a
very, very, they
have a selfish attitude. You know, you cannot be a world champion at that
level. Not going to tell anybody how to do stage end reporting, are you?
Stage end what? What? Stage end what? So Danny Sordo for me is, because he's been there, he's seen it, he's watched the master. You know, Sebastian Loeb performing all these years.
Yeah,
he's worked with those years. He's worked with the best.
Okay.
No.
Then we won't bother doing another podcast.
So we won't.
We still just get M Sport to do then.
M Sport.
M Sport.
I don't know. Yeah, okay, listen. I've seen a few comments on our video saying that we're skirting around M Sport's issues. We're not.
We talked about this, didn't we, on Saturday night? We didn't talk about M Sport and Tannic. We should have done. And that was a mistake. We should have done, because... It was a time issue.
There was so much else going on.
So exactly, there was a lot going on. We have massive respect, obviously, for everything that M Sport's doing. It's a tough time right now. We've seen teams go through this in the history of the sport. And they will get through it. They've been through this before. You look between, like Rich Milner said the other night, from 12 to 17, they didn't win a rally. Well, you know, they were winning in February.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've a long way to go before that.
Yeah.
I think the difficulty is that they've got Tannak, they've got a high-profile driver. There's an expectation of winning everywhere with Tannak. And Tannak raises his own expectations. He expects to win. In Tannak's mind, he's still in 2019. He's still absolutely at the top of the tree, and nobody in the whole wide world can drive a rally car quicker than him.
And he might be right.
And absolutely.
He might be right.
100%. And when, you know, these flashes of absolute brilliance, like Friday evening, you know, with a pretty much a failed water pump, two stages, bang, bang, quickest. Not with a failed water pump, but, you know, with a water pump that was running continuously. He can still do it. M Sport can still do it. Absolute sympathy for Pierre-Louis Loubet, not to even get his car on the dirt here when he led here 12 months ago. That's agonising for him.
I think, David, I think the thing is, you know, we don't talk critically about things like the water pump failure, because what's the point in talking critically about it? You're a team that's as well...
No, hang on, wait,
let me make my point again.
Sorry.
A team like Toyota, a team like Hyundai, potentially budgets approaching 100 million for the year, you know, they have no excuses. They can endurance test every single part. So they have to find... But we know that we're talking about a different setup, and we know, sadly, that you occasionally you do get a bit of an Achilles heel. Something does go wrong. Us criticising that will not do anything. It will not help the cause. It will not enlighten anyone.
It is our job to inform and comment.
But not to criticise necessarily. And I don't think we should. I think we should, and I hope that we do enlighten, you know, and talk when we talk about the budgets, when we talk about the restrictions that your M Sport face in comparison with the other teams. Hopefully that gives a better picture of the landscape that they operate in. And it's very different. Go ahead. Start. Just stop eating and start.
I talked about the need to do different podcasts. One podcast we absolutely have to do is sit down with Malcolm and with Richard Milner and just talk. People have no clue of the struggles on a daily basis that team is going through just to get here. Just to get here. From the commercial department, from the people, from John Steele, trying to sell cars, trying to sell seats. When Rally One came in, Malcolm Wilson was absolutely told, you will be able to sell these cars. He hasn't sold one. Maybe he sold one to Sir Derides. You know, he's used to selling 10 cars a year, at least, and this is what funds the programme.
And when he was selling R5 cars, that effectively funded the WRC programme.
Yeah, and it is incredibly difficult at every level for M Sport. People have no clue.
And that is why I think sometimes maybe we're not as critical as people expect us to be, because there's no point. There's no point in us criticising these situations.
And it's easy to sit, you know, and I'm not about to berate people, keyboard warriors, whatever they want to call them. Everybody is very, very entitled to their opinion. It's our job to further inform those opinions. Right. That's what we're going to do. We'll go and see Malcolm.
That's another podcast. Is everyone entitled to their own opinion on the internet? I'm not entirely convinced they are.
But another point.
I think we've got four more podcasts. Are you making notes of these podcasts we've got to do? Right, listen, folks. Talking about further podcasts, you've obviously all missed George Donaldson on this one. I'm pretty certain George will be back next week with an in-depth analysis of the retirements, the issues that every driver has suffered here in Greece. Folks, again, thank you very much for joining us.
We miss George here. We miss George in Greece.
We always miss George.
We need to bring George in. George's stories from Greece are unreal.
He's Mr. Safari, he's Mr. Acropolis.
Yeah.
You know, those are the two rallies. Three rallies you associate George with.
Mr. Sweden and Mr. RAC as well.
Well, there's four of them.
Mr. Finland a little bit.
He's just Mr. WRC, isn't he?
He is.
Folks, again, thank you for joining us. If you have missed anything, if anything that David and I has discussed here has got you thinking, and maybe you think, oh, I missed that, just go back to our website, dirtfish.com, find the button that says Dirtfish Live Centre, click on that, and you can scroll through chronologically each day of the rally, and you will find an awful lot more detail about all of those incidents and all of the happenings on the Acropolis Rally of Greece. It has been a joy, folks, talking about this rally for you today. David, thank you very much.
Cole, it's always a joy. It's a little bit hot for me now, I've got to be honest. The jumper is, it's borderline coming off.
So you've normally got a lovely, healthy complexion. It's beginning to look a little bit puce. The heat is building.
Thank heavens.
There's a redness about you which suggests slight overheating.
Thank heavens
there's
we're
a freezer
on a podcast.
There. Get your head in that freezer.
I'm actually going to go and put my head in that freezer right now.
Folks, thanks for joining us. We'll speak to you again shortly.